A month. That's how long we would have together. The five of us in my grandparents' living room most evenings, during the day on drives around the island, or on short walks past the private landmarks of a family. The lot where my father's apartment had once stood. The remodeled hospital where I had been born. My grandparents' first house in Hawaii, before the one on University Avenue, a house I had never known. There was so much to tell in that single month, so much explaining to do. And yet when I reach back into my memory for the words of my father, the small interactions or conversations we might have had, they seem irretrievably lost. Perhaps they're imprinted too deeply. His voice the seed of all sorts of tangled arguments I carry on with myself, as impenetrable now as the pattern of my genes, so that all I can perceive is the worn-out shell. My wife offers a simpler explanation. The boys and their fathers don't always have much to say to each other, unless and until they trust. And this may come closer to the mark, for I often felt mute before him, and he never pushed me to speak. I'm left mostly with images that appear and die off in my mind like distant sounds. His head thrown back in laughter at one of Gramps' jokes as my mother and I hang Christmas ornaments. His grip on my shoulder as he introduces me to one of his old friends from college. The narrowing of his eyes, the stroking of his sparse goatee as he reads his important books. Images and his effect on other people. For whenever he spoke, his one leg draped over the other, his large hands outstretched to direct or deflect attention, his voice deep and sure, cajoling and laughing, I would see a sudden change take place in the family. Gramps became more vigorous and thoughtful, my mother more bashful. Even Toot, smoked out of the foxhole of her bedroom, would start sparring with him about politics or finance, stabbing the air with her blue-veined hands to make a point. It was as if his presence had summoned the spirit of earlier times and allowed each of them to reprise his or her old role, as if Dr. King had never been shot, and the Kennedys continued to beckon the nation, and war and riot and famine were nothing more than temporary setbacks, and there was nothing to fear but fear itself. It fascinated me, the strange power of his, and for the first time I began to think of my father as something real and immediate, perhaps even permanent. 2 weeks later, he was gone. In that time, we stand together in front of the Christmas tree and pose for pictures, the only ones I have of us together. Me holding an orange basketball, his gift to me, him showing off the tie I've bought him. Ah, people will know that I am very important wearing such a tie. At a Dave Brubeck concert, I struggle to sit quietly in the dark auditorium beside him, unable to follow the spare equations of sound that the performers make, careful to clap whenever he claps. For brief spells in the day, I will lie beside him, the two of us alone in the apartment sublet from a retired old woman whose name I forget, the place full of quilts and doilies and knitted seat covers, and I read my book while he reads his. He remains opaque to me, a present mass. When I mimic his gestures or turns of phrase, I know neither their origins nor their consequences. Can't see how they play out over time. But I grow accustomed to his company. The day of his departure, as my mother and I helped him pack his bags, he unearthed two records, 45s, in dull brown dust jackets. Ah, Betty, look here. I forgot that I had brought these for you. The Sounds of Your Continent. It took him a while to puzzle out my grandparents' old stereo, but finally the disc began to turn, and he gingerly placed the needle on the groove. A tinny guitar lick opened, then the sharp horns, the thump of drums, then the guitar again, and then the voices, clean and joyful as they rode up the backbeat, urging us on. Come, Betty, my father said. You will learn from the master. And suddenly his slender body was swaying back and forth, the lush sound was rising, his arms were swinging as they cast an invisible net, his feet wove over the floor in off beats, his bad legs stiff but his rump high, his head back, his hips moving in a tight circle. The rhythm quickened, the horn sounded, and his eyes closed to follow his pleasure. And then one eye opened to peek down at me, and his solemn face spread into a silly grin, and my mother smiled, and my grandparents walked in to see what all the commotion was about. I took my first tentative steps with my eyes closed. Down, up, my arms swinging, the voices lifting. And I hear him still. As I follow my father into the sound, he lets out a quick shout, bright and high, a shout that leaves much behind and reaches out for more. A shout that cries for laughter.